once I see that the device works properly, it release me.
I very much doubt it. You see, before you reactivated it, I reversed the polarity of the neutron flow.
You realize what will happen?
Oh, yes. Do you? Well, I've reversed the polarity of the neutron flow, so the TARDIS should be free of the force field now.
So he's reversed the polarity! Keep back!
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Reversing Polarity, where we kill, discuss queer media theory in classic Doctor Who. My name is Aim, and my pronouns are they, them.
My name is R26, and my pronouns are also they, them. The thing is, we're doing these robot voices. Oh, I am. They didn't have a robot voice in this episode.
No, but they did have that really soothing intonation, especially like episode four.
They did.
And there was one very depressed. Anyway, hello. Welcome to Reversing Polarity. We're discussing the robots of death.
Yes, a Fourth Doctor and Leela serial. We've already talked about our lives before the podcast recording, so you can't have a parasocial relationship with this episode. I mean, I guess you can, it'll just be more difficult. But yeah, so we did that one. It's our third Fourth Doctor and Leela story, technically speaking, although the second one we've actually watched.
Maybe when we actually get to the end of the show, we should go back and suffer the talons.
We've discussed, maybe. We've got time. Yeah.
We've got years.
Yeah, so had you seen this one before, Aim?
I haven't, actually. I feel like it should be one that Joel should have shown me when we were first going through a lot of Classic Who, because it's fucking good. It's an absolute banger. Hadn't seen it before, heard it had good reviews, and it slaps. I had a fantastic time.
Yeah.
How about you?
That's about where I'm at with it.
Yeah. I know you're not a massive Fourth Doctor fan, as they go.
I'm still not a massive Fourth Doctor fan, but he was, you know, it was a good serial. I really enjoyed it. I remember Stephen said that he really liked it when he did our Remembrance of the Daleks episode. Mm. Go and listen to it. I can't remember what I called it. Oh, A Very Special Weapons Dalek. Go and listen to that one after you listen to this one. And then write and review us on iTunes.
Tell your long-lost relatives about us.
I definitely seen the bit where it goes, please do not throw hands at me, because I think it might have been in the dance mix. But other than that, not so much.
I also want to apologise at this stage for the very squeaky chair I'm sitting in.
That's life. Podcast admin-wise, we have not recorded a proper episode of the podcast in what feels like 6 years. So this
I think it might be seven, actually.
But we're going to have a good time. Wibbly-wobbly, timey-wobbly stuff. As we said, we watched The Robots of Death by Chris Boucher or Boucher or Butcher or something like that. And it is it is a cracking one. The Fourth Doctor and Leela land aboard a sand miner, whose crew believe them to be responsible for a murder. As the crew continue to be picked off, the Doctor begins to suspect that the sand miner's robots may be responsible for the murders. .. Dun dun dun!
It's like Agatha Christie meets Dune.
It is. I have not seen Dune. I have not read Dune. I do not understand Dune, but I believe you.
I haven't. I think there's a big either. Word. The only way I've engaged with it is through memes that Joel sends me without context. So the vibes.
Robophobia is the mind killer. Am I right?
Yeah.
Am I right?
Something something Gumjamar.
Yeah.
Is that anything?
That you could do this, but the sand miners would just be big worms and they were living in the worm's tummy. We cannot. I've read so quite a lot of sci-fi in my life.
Kind of like the Trill.
Kind of like the Trill, but reverse Trill. Imagine if.
Little tiny humans inside of worm symbiont.
Yeah, exactly. Dax is a big worm with a tiny, tiny chest here inside. Oh my god, like a little Gundam. Oh, perfect.
3 minutes into the episode.
Yeah. Okay. You have to begin the episode one summary.
I need to finish
Crunchy
My Chocolate.
A hero for brevity. A hero for brevity, the author of this TARDIS wiki entry, so thank you very much.
Thank you. Episode one. We start on a distant planet. A huge sand miner vehicle, ooh. Storm Mine 4, very creatively named, is slowly scraping the surface of a vast, barren desert in search of precious minerals. The sand miner is manned by 9 humans and numerous robots. The robots conduct a routine scan of the area and locate a large sandstorm. which the commander, Uvanov, decides to pursue, as the storm will bring heavier and more valuable minerals, such as Lucanol, to the surface.
And I've got a note here, but like, is it just me or is the model shot insanely good? It looks so good in like a bizarre way.
It kind of has like Thunderbirds vibes.
I was going to say it has Thunderbirds vibes. I think in between the last two times, I can't remember if I'd watched it the time we recorded Invasion of Time, but I have now watched a documentary about Gerry Anderson Productions, including Thunderbirds.
Oh, sweet.
And they had it's called Filmed in Super Marionation. It's on Netflix. Fucking good. And I had a whole thing about how they used to film things in slow motion so that the explosions looked bigger. And I feel like Doctor Who might have learned from that because, you know, the movement looks heavier.
It does, yes.
Even if, as you say, it looks like they're ironing a cliff.
From a distance, it looked like they were ironing a cliff. Mm.
But, like, it looked like a real cliff and a real iron. Yeah, you know, it looks good. And I like the lighting and sort of the colour grading of the whole thing. I think it looks quite moody and not, like, washed out like a lot of 70s Who ends up.
Yeah, I agree. One of the crew, the disliked scientist Chubb, who has evil punk energy...
Wow, I wonder how we could tell that he was disliked.
is going to collect an instrument package. Uvanov is angered at Chubb for taking so long, and Paul goes to look for him. The package is stuck, and Chubb sends for a robot. V-45 arrives, but is acting strange. His eyes are glowing red, which is a bit odd. V-45 corners and strangles Chubb, killing him.
Kind of Ood vibes.
Oh, definitely. I did see a comparison between those two in my research. In the corridor, Paul hears Chubb scream. He finds Chubb's body. Paul goes to the control deck and tells Uvanov about the murder. Uvanov does not want to go and investigate it as they'll lose the storm, but the other crew make him go to investigate. They find a strange object on Chubb's hand, a corpse marker.
Very spooky.
And about this
concept.
Time of
time... Very spooky concept. Also, I like the cold open in this, where it's just like, yes, obviously, it's not like a proper cold open because the credits start, but like, there's a lot of setup on the sort of orgy sand mining machine.
Yes.
Before we get to the Doctor and Leela showing up.
Yes. About this time, the TARDIS materialises in one of the scoops. After the Doctor and Leela emerge from the TARDIS, it's removed by a large mechanical arm as it is blocking the scoop. This is like one of those grabber arms you see in like arcade machines.
It's perfect. It's the most perfect telly I've ever seen in my life.
Everything on classic.
I've got a screen cap of it in the document because it made me laugh so hard.
It's very cute. Later, the Doctor and Leela are brought out of the scoop by two robots and locked in a room. The Doctor uses his sonic screwdriver to unlock the door and goes in search of the TARDIS, while Leela finds Chubb's body being taken away by some robots. The human crew suspects the two time travellers of murdering Chubb, and tensions increase when it's found that they have left the room in which they were locked. Uvanov orders the robots to recapture them. The Doctor and Leela are separated, with the Doctor finding a second dead man, Carol, in a hopper which starts to fill with sand that buries them both.
Absolute Apache's vibes here.
It did look like he was being drowned in coffee beans.
Yeah, I mean...
Which in fairness, I wouldn't mind dying that way.
I've definitely mentioned Apaches before on the podcast, but yes, for any listeners that don't know, it's a horrifying 1970s PSA about farm equipment and how children shouldn't be allowed to play unsupervised on farms because they will drown in slurry, drown in grain, die of horrible poisoning from drinking chemicals. I think one of them might fall in a wood chipper, one of them gets run over. They all die in horrible, horrible ways. And that was, I guess, entertainment. 1970s. I mean, I think it was probably before this episode, so maybe it was an inspiration for this scene.
There's a long list of inspirations. I don't think Apaches is on there.
It should be. Really sort of the summary underplays the amount of time that is spent lounging around bitching at each other and looking queer as fuck.
Yeah,
like
we do need to address tiger skin the rugs. Entire aesthetics.
There's tiger skin rugs. It's literally like, what else are they going to be doing? The robots are doing all the work, so they're all just clearly sucking and fucking on this like mining robot.
Incredible eyeliner, beautiful. Everyone has a decorative headwear.
I feel like this would be the ultimate like drag runway topic for like this is what they should have done on Drag Race UK for the BBC 100 runway show instead of like a bunch none of them dressed up as the fucking TARDIS, and I'm still mad. Anyway. I'm very invested in UK Drag Race this series because they've kicked off, every week they've kicked off someone I hate and now we're only left with ones that I like, which has never happened before.
I don't watch Drag Race.
And I support that. I hate RuPaul personally. and I dislike some of the things that the show sort of propagates about the queer community. But also, I love drag.
Yes, I'm still
not comfortable going out to live events very often, so gotta stick with Drag Race UK at the moment.
Shall we move on to episode 2?
Okay, I suppose so. Episode 2,
Before we do, the robots of drag, is that anything?
Oh, maybe. I think that they are camp.
Is not a single straight person in the story.
Yeah,
it's first time in a long time.
Wild. There's also a lot of women in it. I feel like we haven't mentioned, but there's at least like three named women. They're there to get murdered, but there's even a woman of colour in it who talks. Unbelievable.
The fact that this is then followed by Talons of Wang Chiang, what went wrong?
I mean, it didn't go super right in this episode, but at least it's not being actively horrible.
Yeah, no. Set your bar.
But yeah, Zilda is the one I'm thinking of, right? Yeah, she's got like backstory.
She's
great.
I like her.
Yeah, she's great. Lots of sexy women with sort of dubious morality. The Doctor survives by using a blowpipe poking up through the sand through which he breathes. Bullshit, but like whatever. The problem is that it crushes you, not that you like inhale coffee beans. Both he and Leela, who has found a third dead man, Cass, and a dumb robot which can secretly speak, are recaptured. We should probably briefly explain the robot situation here.
Okay, so the robots, they're all humanoid.
Yes, they're all humanoid. They're wearing these beautiful green quilted outfits. They have a sort of, I feel like a vaguely orientalist design, but I don't quite know how to explain what I mean by that.
Oh, to me they looked similar to the clockwork robots from Girl in the Fireplace. They had more of like a Versailles feel to them.
It's sort of the maskness of it.
Mm.
I don't know. I think it might be because I'm thinking of the Terracotta Warriors in appearance.
Oh. Yep.
But, you know, it's more of an aesthetic inspiration, so I guess I get it. So there's three classes of robots. There's Dumbs, Vox, and Super Vox. Dumbs cannot speak.
Okay.
did you know this, or have I just blown your mind?
I think I must have been distracted by something when that happened.
So they didn't really explain it in depth, but basically Dumbs are ones that they can't speak and they're like the drudgery robots. They do all of the manual labour. Vox are sort of like the superintendents, whatever, like the middle managers of the robots. And there is one Super Vox for the installation who like runs everything and is like, you know, more intelligent and has more reasoning capabilities.
Mm.
Cool. But the dumb robot which can secretly speak, it shouldn't be able to do that because dumbs aren't programmed to be able to do that. It's not in their
That's the scene I understood.
Yeah, yeah. So that's sort of the robot setup, and they have slightly different colours, like, of their livery and stuff like that, but it doesn't super matter, because as it turns out, a bit of a spoiler, but the robots aren't really the problem here. The robots aren't really sentient. I was thinking that earlier. I was looking forward to the robots being a bit more independent, but instead they were really just tools. Which, probably, the intention is that you think that, and then it turns out they're being controlled by something, but I would have liked
humans
there to be
are
a bit
the
of
ones
conflict
all along
within
along
them. Oh, is there an echo in here? Paul believes the Doctor and Leela to be innocent, so he frees them and shows them where Chubb was murdered. There, the Doctor convinces Paul that a robot may have killed the meteorologist. While this is happening, a female crew member named Zilda is murdered, who accuses Uvanov of murder over the Tannoy system. She's so fucking cool. She had previously accused Uvanov of murder because he was involved in the death of her brother, something like that.
Mm. That sounds right.
It comes up later on. As mentioned, I watched this episode 6 weeks ago, so...
I'm sorry.
It's not your fault!
Let's continue.
Paul, sent to Uvanov's quarters to investigate, finds the commander bending over Zilda's body. He has him confined to his quarters on suspicion of murdering Zilda. Shortly afterwards, the engineer, Borg, who is responsible for controlling power to the motors, is found dead, and the Sandminer's engines begin to run out of control, threatening the vehicle with destruction. A frantic Toos shrieks, "She's going!" Toos
Which is
one of the
intense.
Other women in the serial.
This is the sort of scene, I was watching this with George's housemate, Tristan, who's not, I don't think he's in much classic Doctor Who, and we were watching this scene very confused. We did not quite know what was going on.
Yeah, I feel like that's part of, some of the climatic scenes in this serial don't have a lot of sort of, they don't have like a driving character perspective, it's just sort of chaos.
Yes.
And sometimes that can be impactful, but it needs to be straightened out afterwards. And this one, it isn't really.
Yeah, yeah, no, yeah, it was confusing. Also, I want to make a Borg joke, but I'm too sleepy. So,
yeah, no, I saw it. I only.
Please tweet us your best Borg jokes.
I only tweeted that there was an engineer called Borg about 10 minutes ago, and I was like, oh, I mean, fair enough. Your turn, babe.
Oh, shit, yeah. Oh, God. It's been a life. Episode 3. The Doctor saves the miner by cutting off the power to the motors. Once the sand miner has stopped moving, sinking under the sand dunes is imminent. Dask sets on quickly repairing the damaged and sabotaged controls so that the miner can continue on its way. I think I figured out why I was confused. I was not realising that when Tyler's Wiki referred to the miner, it meant the sand miner and not a miner.
Yeah, it is confusing, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I am a simple. The Doctor goes to see the dumb robot that Leela claimed could speak, D-84. The robot reveals that it and Paul are undercover agents for the mining company. They were placed on board the miner as a precaution to threats of a robot revolution by a scientist called Taryn Capel, who was raised by robots and considers himself to be one.
The whole Taryn Capel thing, they do not explore the idea of him thinking he's a robot in the least, besides the fact that he face paints himself to look a bit like a robot.
Yes.
I think that it's an interesting idea about transhumanism that they don't do anything with.
Yeah, they could have done. I'm now having thoughts about Data. This is not a Star Trek podcast.
I was also having thoughts about Data, but in relation to D-84.
So D-84 is unique in the fact that it can function autonomously from the Superfox SV-7's commands and appears to possess a higher level of logical reasoning. Can we talk about Data?
Let's talk about Data.
Let's talk about
this
our boy.
This is a Star Trek podcast, but why not?
Yeah. I just love how he gets more and more human over the time. I just like his observations. I like the way that he has the most interesting stories on TNG.
Yeah, I think that Data is sort of an interesting watershed in, like, televised sci-fi, where you begin to go, well, what if this robot did have feelings? You know, like how Vision in Marvel Comics is like, you'll believe a robot can cry. Data is like, you'll believe a robot cares about his pet cat.
Ugh,
and I fucking
you
do.
Spot. Down is good, up is no. I love it.
Yeah, Data's good, but then it also means that you sort of backwards map it onto other media where they just weren't thinking about robots in that particular way. Mm-hmm. Although obviously you have things that were trying to sort of conceptualize androids versus robots versus all sorts of other things. Not that I ever got more than 50 pages into Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, because I just was sick of the guy talking about his dick the entire time.
I haven't even tried.
Well, literally, it's literally every... I know I keep saying literally. About every 5 pages, he goes, and I put on my big cod piece because my cock was so huge. Like,
that's a problem I also share.
Yeah, no, same.
Friends, that was a packing joke. Next paragraph. The Doctor and D-84 search for proof that Taryn Capel is on board and find a secret workshop where the robot's programming has been changed to enable them to kill humans. This becomes a theme. This has been a theme. The Doctor arranges for all the remaining humans to go to the command deck. Looking around the mine... The miner? The mine? Who knows? Leela stumbles on Paul hiding in the storage bay. He's gone mad and is suffering from robophobia. Uvanov arrives after escaping confinement to confront the Doctor, but he is surprised to see a robot enter the workshop. It proves to have orders to kill the Doctor and grabs him by the throat.
The fucking drama of it all, honestly.
Yeah. I actually quite like Paul's madness in this. I think it's very well done. I like Leela's response. Yeah. It's a very gentle response.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think Leela in this is shown to have, like, a really sort of side as a caretaker, which I really like. Because it's not shown in, a sort of, you know, femininity means caretaking. It's like warriors... Oh, sorry. Like, warrior races also need to be very good at looking after people, because you're going to have...
Yeah, it's that whole anthropological thing about the first sign of a civilised society is proof of mended broken bones.
Yeah, especially, I think it's broken femurs, something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, because they wouldn't be able to walk.
Because you have to stay immobile, yeah. But it's interesting, because there's a little bit earlier where she helps Toos with, like, an injury to her wrist. And she goes, what was it? I've written the quote down later, but there's a really good quote that she's like, there's a saying among my people. And it just reminds you that, like, Leela has so many layers and she's so good and I love her so much.
She's so good. I knew you'd like Leela. I've said you'd like Leela.
Yeah, you did, and you were correct.
I was correct. I had my moments.
Yeah, the robophobia thing, we can probably come back to it later, but it's very much like a sort of nervous breakdown over the stress of this whole situation.
Yeah. Very much. All right, episode 4?
Yeah, I did just want to say I also love the bit where the robot comes in. Uvanov's like, oh no, what's this robot going to do? And the Doctor's like, well, whichever one it goes for, it's going to prove a theory that I have or whatever. And it goes for him and he's like, that seems about right, yeah. Speaking of, I should be hugging my fourth Doctor Pudsey. I'm going to hug my fourth Doctor Pudsey for the rest of the episode.
Good.
He watches over my Doctor Who desk and shelves, so... Episode 4. The Doctor and Ivanov escape and head for the control deck. Someone, presumably Dask, whose responsibilities include robots, shuts down all of the robots whose programming has not been changed, leaving just the killer robots and D-84 operational. Leela tracks down Toos in her quarters, who has just been attacked by another rogue robot, and takes her to the control deck to join the Doctor and Ivanov.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have a great quote from Leela, who throws an arm at D-84, who says, "Please do not throw hands at me."
Exact intonation. Perfect.
Thank you. Sometimes I can mirror things quite well. The day I told the kids I could do a really good vampire voice. But then they weren't even impressed with my vampire voice. And you know how good my vampire voice is.
I love your vampire voice.
But yeah, I love the sort of current of humour in the serial. Like, it's good. There's a bit where D-84 is investigating and, like, the camera pans slightly to see the Doctor sitting cross-legged on a bunk, and there's this little twinkling sound on the soundtrack and he's got his eyes really wide open. So that was good. The human crew are surprised by D-84's arrival carrying a near-catatonic pool. Oh yeah, D-84's bridal-carrying pool. I have thoughts about this, as you may not be surprised to hear. But the Doctor explains the pair's real functions as undercover agents. Looking at his chief mover, Ivanov sadly remembers another crew member losing his mind to robophobia years earlier, who ran outside to escape them and died. It was Zilda's brother, hence her accusation of murder. It's a really interesting idea, and as I say, we'll discuss it later.
Yep. I wish there was more space to explore it.
Yeah, I imagine it comes up in, like, the robot's audios, but I haven't listened to any.
Me neither.
We shall find out. SV7, whose programming has now also been changed, tells them to come out and die, but Toos and Ivanov decide to defend themselves. Dask is later revealed to be Taran Kapel, intent on releasing his brothers, the robots, from bondage to human dross, and programming them with an ambition to rule the world. This is making me realise we sort of missed the scene where they're looking at all of the sort of to be deactivated robots in the robot bay, and one of them, like, has a massive fucking hole in its head. Like, wild. I love it. Like, the fact that they clearly made a mask solely to put a big hole in it. Mm-hmm. Like, anything. The bit where they reprogram SV7 is genuinely horrifying because they, like, take the front of its face off.
It looks very cool.
It's so good. I was like, what the hell? What is this? Like, actually thinking about the makeup of your robot thing? Like, they never think about the inside of the monsters. It's like when the fucking Attack of the Cybermen, the Cyberman's head comes off. You're like, there should be a spine in there.
Yeah, and there's not, and it's fucking terrifying.
Taran Kapel orders his modified robots to destroy the remaining humans and the Doctor and Leela. Ivanov and Toos get to work on modifying some Z9 explosives to destroy the robots. In the storage bay, Leela finds a damaged robot with its hand covered in blood, which the Doctor reasons is Borg's. This is what Poole saw that sort of made him snap in the previous episode, I think.
Yeah.
Understandable. This is the one that had the big hole in its head.
Like, can you blame him?
No. No, I can't blame him for having a bit of a breakdown.
I mean, I've been there.
Yeah. Yeah, you've been attacked by a robot, right?
That's exactly what's happened. You know, post-traumatic robot disorder.
Stop apologising to me about being attacked by a robot. It's not your fault.
I'm just so used to victim blaming myself when it comes to robots.
He had been the only one strong enough to even try to fight back, and he may even have sabotaged the engine controls in a suicidal attempt to destroy the miner and all the killer robots on board. The Doctor dismantles the damaged robot and creates a final deactivator, a device that will destroy any still functioning robots at close range. In the process, he tries to explain to Leela how robophobia works. Robots do not display any body language, which the sensitive Leela had already picked up, calling them creepy mechanical men. And despite the fact most robots are built in humanoid form, some people are so unnerved that they become terrified of them. This is a pretty good explanation of the Uncanny Valley, I would say.
It is. Yeah, that's that comes up in my notes somewhere. That's basically what's going on.
Yeah, and it's good. It's good as hell.
Mm-hmm.
The pair head back to Taran Kapel's hidden workshop, where the Doctor hides Leela with a canister of helium gas. That was why her voice was
That's
so
why
high.
Her voice was creaky, yeah.
Telling her to release it when Taran comes in. The Doctor hopes that this will change Taran's voice, so his robots, unable to recognise him, will not obey his orders and turn on him. Love it. Taran arrives and damages D-84, no! But the robot is able to activate the Doctor's device to destroy a killer robot, knowingly sacrificing itself in the process. No! D-84!
Having feelings about robots? Robots having feelings about us? What is sci-fi for if not this?
Trying to do the last post. I can't do it.
I feel like
there
should be a kazoo in arm's reach.
Oh, probably. I've got a, actually I have a harmonica. Hang on.
I'll tell George he needs to get a kazoo, so next time I'm recording at his, I can grab it.
Hang on. I genuinely have a harmonica. I can't play the harmonica.
I think Discord's filtering it out.
I don't think my Audacity is going to.
I think Discord is saying, well, that's obviously not what you want to be hearing. So I have no idea what's just gone on.
Horrible harmonica noises. Sorry, D84, I'll love you and miss you.
Do we need to hold a funeral for the robot?
Yeah. My dad's going to be so ashamed of this harmonica playing.
Getting like the occasional snippet. Anyway, shall
okay,
we keep
I need
going?
To stop playing. I have the thumb harp around here somewhere as well. I've got so many musical instruments. I have a guitar like 6 feet away, and yet I went for the harmonica.
Let's keep recording the episode before we get onto a full musical episode, which is inevitable, but I think we should put some more production into it.
We're going to pitch a Doctor Who musical. Leela releases the helium gas, causing Terran's voice. We could talk about my Doctor Who fan music from when I was 17.
Yes, we can.
Leela releases the helium gas, causing Taran's voice to become high-pitched and squeaky, and Taran is killed by SV-7 when it fails to identify his voice pattern. The Doctor then destroys SV-7 with a Laserson probe before Leela calls out from her hiding place in a high-pitched voice, "Will somebody let me out?" With
it's
the robot
adorable.
Threat over, it is adorable. With the robot threat over and a rescue ship coming to collect the surviving humans, the Doctor and Leela return to the TARDIS and leave the Sandminer. End of serial.
To remain in this universe, the creature would have to reverse its polarity.
I liked it. I thought it was fun. I like the aesthetic. I like the threats. I like the murder robots.
Yeah, it's good. I liked it a lot as well. I think that parts of it were slower than I would have liked, but I did enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. There's a lot of stuff I want to discuss later on, because I think there are a lot of things to dig into with this, but I guess we can just start with our segments.
An apple a day keeps the, No, never mind.
Yes. Here is my Fourth Doctor update. This is, I'm going to try and count, how many Fourth Doctor serials have we done now?
If we get the sheet out, we can find out.
We did Traken, Destiny,
Is there now
Blood,
a graph somewhere on the sheet?
Genesis of the Daleks. I don't know how I would have done that. This is at least like our 8th Fourth Doctor serial.
This is our 12th Fourth Doctor serial.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Why would Jesus I joke Christ. About this?
This is our 12th Fourth Doctor serial. He is still my least favourite. I like him fine. He's not endearing me in his treatment of Leela, still.
Mm.
And this is my third encounter of him with Leela, and I just think that he doesn't appreciate her. It's like the Ten and Martha thing, where you like Ten less because he's not treating Martha very well.
Yep, that exactly.
So, you know, and Leela has the advantage of having a big knife, and yet she refuses to throw it at him.
I would throw it at him if I were her.
Yeah. I do like him in this serial, like, separate from his treatment of Leela. I think that he's having a good time solving the mystery.
I thought that he was a little bit bored the first couple of episodes.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I hear that you've got some stuff in BTS about this, but it doesn't seem to be Tom Baker's favourite serial. But I mean, in the sense that, like...
He was getting very opinionated by this stage into his run.
Yeah, I can imagine. I don't know. I think I just like the image of them on the Sandminer, like him getting stuck in the grain and all this other stuff. Like, a lot of incidents occur, but I also think this could have worked. I would have enjoyed it more with other Doctors, like, you know, I don't know, Fivey. I think Fivey would have had a great time in this one.
Mm.
Can you imagine Five and Tegan and Nyssa on this on this one?
Well, why would you pitch to me a better episode when I cannot watch it?
Because I love to make you suffer.
You do,
much like
you
how
do.
My various Doctor Who discords are making me suffer by pointing out that Tissa may no longer be canon after Sunday, and I'm like, but it will be. In my heart, it'll be canon.
Shall we keep going?
We probably should. There's a lot of good quotes from him this serial. So, to the rational mind, nothing is inexplicable, only unexplained. Also, he explains the dimensional trans...
He does!
...thing.
With little boxes and perspective and...
Yes. But imagine that you could put this box inside this box while them remaining the same size. And I'm like, fine, dimensionally transcendental, fine.
We get it. It's cool.
But yeah, it was good. There's also the bit where he makes Lila use a yo-yo for some reason.
Yeah, at the start. And she's just like, this isn't helping. I thought it was part of the magic.
So cute. There's a lot of good quips, I think. I didn't
gotta
write down
ask
all of them, but
gotta ask why you've got B movie in the list.
Because
of
you
notes.
Said according to all known laws of aviation, a bee should be unable to fly.
I'm going back to bed.
No, we need to record the podcast.
Let's keep going.
Yes.
Ooh, TARDIS design. I like the TARDIS design. It's one we don't see much.
Yeah, it's the gothic secondary control room, isn't it?
It's like Edgar Allan Poe's writing desk vomited on the courtroom. Affectionate.
It reminds me of a sort of like a Tudor like dining hall or something. Like you're at a Hatfield house and this is what it's going to look like.
You can see how some of the Eighth Doctor's TARDIS design was like stemmed on this.
Yeah, I think the problem is that it's quite dark. I think that nowadays it would have like the stained glass would be like lit from within somehow, so it would be really like bright and quite moody with the shadows.
But it's actually a little bit cramped.
Yeah. So like,
you know, it feels small.
It does feel small. I mean, it is specifically a secondary room, so I guess that makes sense. But
yeah.
Still, it is good and I do like it.
Yeah. I like this version of his outfit as well. He's got like a little cravat and a waistcoat. He doesn't have the scarf on the entire time. It really suits him.
Yeah, I was thinking about his waistcoat because I was thinking, God, I missed six. I saw his waistcoat and I was like, where's Colin Baker?
Where is Colin Baker? It also sort of like he does have a slightly more serious like grump to him after the Deadly Assassin, so it fits.
I mean, there is a lot went on in the Deadly Assassin as far as I understand it.
Yeah, oh, we'll get that.
Someone on the Discord said that they liked the Invasion of Time more than the Deadly Assassin.
And they're wrong.
I mean, I haven't even seen The Deadly Assassin, and I know that, because the Invasion
I like
of Time
The Deadly
is
Assassin. The Invasion
garbage.
Of Time is, there's just hours of my life I wish I could get back.
Yeah.
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 I appreciate his pacifism as well.
Yeah. I think sometimes four can feel a little bit politically neutral, or like just sort of what the writer demands, but I like when the Doctor gets back to the pacifist roots.
Yeah, me
or,
too.
Well, I mean, obviously I say pacifist roots. The Doctor has not always been a pacifist within canon, but gets back to the pacifism that I enjoy so much, like Pertwee's pacifism.
Yes.
Speaking of, I was teaching music this afternoon, and the music scheme we use, shit music scheme, by the way, so I'm not going to name it, but it did have a version of Consider Yourself from a recording of Oliver with John Pertwee in it.
Huh.
I had no idea he'd been in it. I guess he
As
must
Dodger?
Have been... I guess he must have been Fagin?
Oh, yeah, that track.
Pacifism, good. I like that violence isn't the answer and we end up in a fucking Murder on the Orient Express or And Then There Were None kind of situation. But he's Poirot. I like Poirot.
Yeah.
Or Columbo, actually. I feel like sometimes Four has a Columbo energy.
He does, actually. Yeah, he does. The lurking.
Yes.
What else we got? There's a bit where one of the robots wears his hat and scarf as a decoy and I love it.
That is good. And we love the hat.
We do love the hat. We're actually wearing hats ourselves right now.
Yes, absolutely. I'm wearing my Pudsy as a hat.
I'm wearing my elaborate headpiece to match the elaborate miners.
Yes, absolutely. Should we roll companions in with wife and do it later?
Yes.
Because
K-9
is not in this episode.
Which is tragic.
It is tragic. I can't remember if they actually bring one home with them at the end of Fang Rock, or if it's that he makes his own or he gets posted it or something.
I don't know. I cannot remember. My memory is bad.
Yeah. Someone will tell us, I'm sure. Please email us, but in a nice way. But yeah, so I guess that means that we have to get on our knees, Doctor.
On your knees, Doctor.
There is no way the space mining vehicle isn't just a big orgy mobile. There are tiger skin rugs. Like, we talked about this already, but, like, they all lie around bitching at each other. But also, they've clearly all explored one another's bodies. And there is some kind of, like, bizarre polycule situation going on. Mm-hmm. Everyone is fucked except Zilda and Uvanov because she hates him so bad.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's no platonicness there. Yeah. The entire vibes are just very gay. There's eyeliner, the hair. They're sort of giving each other massages.
Yeah, that was the one that really got me. He was just lying on his front with the one doing a massage. And I was like... In a
That's
version of this, in the Torchwood version of this episode, they would be undressed and they would be on. It would be foreplay. Like
there would be dicks
in
mouths.
But...
Am I wrong?
Yes. No.
But yeah, it was actually really nice to start an episode with such gay vibes because it's been a while.
I challenge you, listener, to watch episode one of Robots of Death and disagree with us. Like,
it's impossible. I won't say we're completely right about everything because, you know, we're human, we're fallible, but we're completely right about this.
Yes, absolutely.
The robots are wearing like square tinfoil shoes. Kind of gay.
Absolutely.
And the robots sort of stay in shiny restraints, which the Doctor and Leela end in at some point, and shiny there restraints.
There are sort of occasional bondage vibes, but not like hugely.
It's more like bondage for aesthetic than bondage for control.
Yes. It's decorative bondage. It's also bondage in like the sense of like, you know, showing that the robots are sort of subservient or like leading to the sort of oppressed underclass robot situation. The problem is that the robots aren't sentient, so that metaphor becomes fraught. But there we are. However, the realest gay thing in this serial is D84/Pool, because they are co-workers, they are bridal carrying one another. I bet D84 sacrifices himself in that last episode, but only after he realizes that Pool is now terrified of him. So like,
What's the point in going on?
Because that's definitely a logical assumption to make, D84. Mm-hmm. I bet your logic circuits worked really hard on that one.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that it's real. I don't know how else to describe it. I like robot-human pairings. I find them very interesting.
So you also ship Data and Geordi?
Of course I fucking do. Who do you think I am?
I should never have doubted you.
I've read some great DeForge fanfiction in my life.
Oh, beautiful.
I think fucking Iona Dash Sharma wrote some pretty good DeForge fic, actually.
Iona's great. I like Iona.
Yeah. Have you read their fic?
No. I should check it out.
Their fic is so good!
It's mostly because I know Iona as a person more than I know them as a writer.
Yeah. I mean,
I've not actually read that much of their stuff.
I met them at Worldcon and I was only mildly embarrassing about it. Only mildly.
Oh, we got coffee. It was lovely because we have mutuals you two should be friends. It was lovely.
I sort of inveigled myself into going for coffee with them and Ev.
Nice.
Me and Ev are good friends. Oh my god, since the last time we recorded an episode, I'm pretty sure I read Ocean's Echo in the gap between the two, or maybe I read it just before the last one, but oh my god, Ocean's Echo is so good! Oh my god. Oh my god, it's so good.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my god. Also, I just got approved for an arc of A Restless Truth.
Nice. You're having a good time there.
I am having a good time there, and I finally finished reading a book today, and I'm just on a good reading spree.
Nice. I'm reading Babel at the moment. It's really good.
Ooh, yeah. I want to borrow my brother's partner's copy of that. God, okay, we can talk about books later.
I do need to disappear at some point.
You one of these television chaps, then?
I am no sort of chap, sir.
Gender. Robots. That's it.
Yeah, robots are always interesting when it comes to gender. They're clearly coded.
They're masculine.
But
why?
They have no internal or external organs. They're just there. So
we don't know. They might have. No, I'm not gonna say that. That's a cursed thought.
I mean, they might have dicks, but why would they? Did Dask give them dicks?
Fucking the mine workers.
Does Taran, whatever his name is he fucking the robots?
Yes.
I mean, true. Yeah. I mean, there's definitely a sex bot industry here. I just don't know if it's the same industry. But yeah, it's always interesting when we have clearly dimorphically gendered, like, essentially objects in Doctor Who. Or like, you know, like non-sentient things. And you go, but why? And then it's like, well, because we have a guy inside it.
Mm-hmm.
There we are. I miss the Quarks, given that they were voiced by a girl. A woman. We like that.
Yeah. This is the sort of thing where, like, there's only gender because somebody in the design team isn't questioning gender.
Yes. Also, on that note, I do think that the sort of the mining squad, in a more modern version of this story, I think that would be played up the androgyny of it even more. Because already, like, the makeup and the outfits are quite gender neutral for the 70s, I think. Like, they're wearing quite long, flowing outfits. It's a little bit more androgynous than you would expect, necessarily, which I really enjoy. I wonder who designed the costumes for this episode. I mean, besides the classic tactic of closing your eyes and going into the BBC wardrobe department.
Oh, I'm seeing what you grab.
Oh, sure. Lots of people.
And there's a woman!
A woman? Hey!
Okay, so we're going to get into our sandminer, and we're going to make our way across the dunes. What's that? The sandstorm in the horizon is clearing. Can you see it?
It's Wife City! And we're going to go there with loads of whatever it was called. Lanisol. Can't remember. tissue.
That sounds like an antidepressant.
It does. Or possibly a hemorrhoid cream. Anyway.
Welcome to Wife City, where we stock fantastic hemorrhoid cream. Let's talk about Leela.
Yes. Oh my fucking god, Leela. She's so sexy.
Her
She's
outfit,
so
her voice,
good.
Her words, her hitting
her
people.
Her knives.
Her violence.
Yeah.
It's her everything. Really her good. Curiosity.
Oh my god, yeah. She's so insightful as well. Like, she notices things so quickly. And the doctor is trying to, like, Eliza Doolittle her, when what he should actually be doing is just leaving her exactly as she is, because
she's perfect. You know that song, Perfect by Ed Sheeran? It's actually written about Leela?
I'm sure it was. I don't think I do know the song, though.
It's about Leela, trust me.
I only know a song called Perfect by Pink, because I'm
also about Leela.
Yes, absolutely. But yeah, she's great. Like, that's silly. Classic Leela quote.
There is a bit of episode 2 where she goes to stab the robot and it's quite unconvincing. She sort of misses.
Yeah, is that the... I think that's partly because they didn't want her to immediately murk it. Because realistically, Leela would be out of here in 5 seconds. You know,
yeah.
Get her patch of Janice Thorns out. I like the bit where she throws a knife at the robot and it stabs it directly in the chest and it's like, nah, takes it out.
Mm-hmm.
Classic.
What were you going to say?
I was going to say, if, the quote down here is the one about when she's helping Toos with her hand, she goes, if you're bleeding, look for a man with scars or a sexy Leela.
Yes!
Modern Leela also, they would have more time for makeup, so she'd probably have like a cool like scar, so, like several cool scars and stuff. Also, she'd be wearing trousers, which I would appreciate for her.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm looking disrespectfully, in fairness.
Oh, absolutely I'm looking disrespectfully. Like, now that it's out there, I'm not going to look away, but...
However, were I to redo it, I would make different choices.
Yes. Anyway, next wife, we have Zilda.
Yeah.
Gaslight Gatekeep Just... girl boss.
I mean, I saw her, I came to add her to the list, saw you'd already done it, and, you know, no notes. She's just got big wife energy.
She does.
I want her to be in a better place
so
where
early.
She doesn't die.
Yeah, I want her brother to be also alive so that, you know, she can be happier.
Yeah.
I love her fish costume. She's wearing, like, genuinely, like, a fucking, like, gill situation. It's crazy. I love it. The fact that she blames Uvanov for her death, even though she has no evidence just before she dies, I'm like, you know what, fair enough.
I mean, we all have people we would blame for our deaths, even if we had no evidence.
Absolutely. Liz Truss.
Something, something segue to the next wife.
Yes. Toos, who is the other woman.
Toos.
She's beautiful.
Toos. I love her. She's very regal.
Very much sometimes in possession of the brain cell. Most of the time she's sort of wandering around being somewhat flaky, which is fair enough, because someone has to be.
Thing is, I have that energy at the moment, so I'm into it.
Absolutely. And she tries to hit a robot to death with a vase,
I can't.
Which I love. And then the robot just detaches its hand and wanders off because it's getting annoyed, which is quite funny.
Yeah, just general soothing energy.
We had three wives this series. Can you believe
it? When did we last have a three-wife cereal?
I can't remember, honest to God.
It's like a three-grain cereal, but with wives.
Today's science fiction so often becomes tomorrow's science fact.
The serial was based on the works of Agatha Christie with a series of unexplained murders.
So sort of the Boucher. Golden age of mystery, which I enjoy. It is quite a golden age of mystery kind of
It is. It's got the plot structure.
Yeah, I do wish there it was a proper parlour room scene, though, which we don't get until, like, Unicorn and the Wasp. Written by Evil Man, so...
Still, it's a fun episode.
It is a fun episode.
Boucher was asked to write robots after another serial fell through. He was chosen as his work on the preceding story, The Face of Evil, had been widely appreciated. It was Philip Hinchcliffe who pursued the idea of a robot story, despite script editor Robert Holmes' generally correct opinion that they were dull. Holmes was confident that he could produce a good script for an enclosed space, as the crew were aware that the serial would be a studio-bound one. Hinchcliffe suggested a setting akin to the machines featured in the 1965 sci-fi novel Dune,
Wait.
And so the sand miners were created. I knew Dune was in my head for some reason.
Some reason.
Tom Baker was reportedly highly critical of the script. He complained to Boucher during the initial read-through and later voiced his derogatory opinions of the story to director Michael E. Bryant. According to Bryant, this was because Baker wanted the Doctor to display certain characteristics of his imagining, which sounds like a very diplomatic way to say he was up his own arse.
Yeah.
Sort of following on from that, Tom Baker disliked the resolution of the first episode's cliffhanger, suggesting instead that an action-packed sequence in which the Doctor swings on his scarf to kick the door open. He and director Michael E. Bryant argued vociferously until Bryant revealed that Graham Williams was present to observe the shoot. Baker quickly agreed to follow the director's instruction.
Oh, classic.
Mm. The story had the working titles The Storm Mine Murders and Planet of the Robots. A rumoured working title for this story is War of the Robots, but this does not appear on any contemporary BBC paperwork.
Okay, flash challenge. Pitch an alternate title for this serial. I've got They Do It With Lasers and Things.
Murder on the Sandminer Express.
Ooh, that's a good one. What about... oh my god, I do know other Agatha Christie titles. Why didn't they ask Zilda?
And then there was D84.
The DVSV murders.
Let's keep going.
Absolutely, okay.
This is one of the few stories which explains in relative simplicity using a demonstration with two boxes how the TARDIS is dimensionally transcendental. This story is the last to feature the wood paneled TARDIS control room we were praising earlier, as the wooden walls warped while the set was in storage. Good
Absolutely
job, team.
Absolutely classic. Happened to the normal TARDIS set in the Seventh Doctor's era, as far as I recall.
Mm-hmm. Happens to me whenever I'm in storage for too long.
Yeah.
Robophobia, an irrational fear of robots, is at one point referred to as Grimwade syndrome. This was an in-joke reference to production assistant Peter Grimwade, later to become a director and writer on the series, who had bemoaned the fact that the stories on which he was assigned to work almost always involved robots. However, the description of robophobia given by the Doctor in fact coincides with the real-life phenomenon called the Uncanny Valley.
Indeed. I love the Uncanny Valley. It is the... It's fascinating. It's the source of many of my most nightmarish visions, so to speak. But also some pretty good movies, so...
Yes. In the DVD commentary, Louise Jameson reveals that she nearly killed a cameraman during the production of this story. In the scene where Leela throws her knife at the attacking robot, on one take, Jameson wasn't holding it correctly, which caused it to fly off in the wrong direction and very nearly stab a cameraman back. In future stories, the knife had to be blunt to prevent this from happening again.
What fascinates me is that it wasn't already blunt.
She nearly killed someone. I adore her.
Oh my god, I need to tell my Louise Jameson
completely
anecdote.
Forgot your Louise Jameson anecdote.
Yeah, so basically, listeners, I told Aim this anecdote semi-recently. My dad came to visit a couple of weeks ago now. This was somewhat before we initially planned to record the episode. We were talking about Doctor Who, as we want to do. Or we were talking about Leela, as we also want to do. And he said, oh, well, you know, me and your mum went to see Louise Jameson in a Shakespeare play once. And I went, oh, really? And he said, oh, it was As You Like It. And I said, was she perhaps playing Rosalind? And he said, yes. And then we both looked at each other for a bit and I said, Dad, am I named after Louise Jameson in a Shakespeare play? So it's not impossible that I was named after Louise Jameson indirectly.
I love it.
Yeah, it's good, it's good. I looked it up later. It's possible. That's all I'm going to say. But yeah, so that's my Louise Jameson anecdote. I'll have to tell Louise Jameson this anecdote at some point.
As soon as you see her.
We'll have to have her on the podcast.
Oh, she's always welcome. Our doors are always open. She can come and see our hats.
Yes.
Now we'll all go, except Miss Shaw.
Oh, just a minute. I'm not going to miss all
No, Miss Shaw.
Have you never heard of female emancipation?
Liz, this time I think he's right.
Aesthetics! Love the aesthetics of this episode.
It is actually really good. I like the glittery eyes that the robots have when they're being evil.
Yeah. I think we've already talked a bit, like, I mentioned the fact that it's clear that there is at least some Orientalism in the sort of...
There is.
The design of the robots. I think that that is... It's certainly kind of the era of, like, cyberpunk, which is a lot more, like, openly Orientalist and, you know, xenophobic, etc. So it's not great. Unfortunately, I also think that the design is really, really good, and it's one of the best looking robot designs from Classic Who. Like, they clearly put money into it and it looks good.
Yes. I think that's possibly part of the reason why the story's gone down with such good repute.
Yeah. It looks...
It's well produced.
It's very well produced. It looks expensive, even though we know it wasn't. There's also, like, the direction of it is really good. And there's some really interesting sort of movement of the camera. There's a bit where one of the robots is coming towards the camera and the camera is moving backwards, which I really liked. There's sort of some interesting framing shots. There's that weird bit where they're flashing backwards and forwards between the robot and video feed of Taron Capel or whatever his name is. And that, like, it was probably seizure inducing, but it was interesting, right? Which is so rare sometimes for like mid fourth Doctor stuff. I feel like it gets a bit uninspired with the camera work, but this one, it all unified together.
There were some good angles
really well.
As well.
Yeah, and obviously we've already said the model work is fucking good too. So.
Yeah, it is.
Also, I noticed that the number pads for the security, like the number locks, it's just pocket calculators that have been stuck to the wall, essentially. Like, I looked at it quite closely. Because there was a zoomed in shot of it, and then I looked at it and I was like, that's a C, and that's a plus, a minus, a divide, and a multiply sign. So they're pocket calculators, but they look quite good from a distance.
Mm-hmm. Points about capitalism, automation, and workers' rights.
Yes, I wrote this down.
That's all the theme of the story.
Yeah, I wrote this down in episode one. This is a story about a man who believes he is a robot trying to overthrow human society because he believes... I guess the implication is because he believes that robots are being treated unfairly. And they are. They are being treated unfairly.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're being used as essentially like sort of... I can't think of the word. Not livestock. Like beasts of burden. Beasts of burden kind of situation.
Yeah.
Like, they're not treated as sentient creatures. I wouldn't quite go so far as to say that it's like an allegory for slavery, which would be fucked up as hell.
No, but it is.
But they're being treated in a way which ignores the fact that they could, if we allowed, like, because it's all programmed by humans. Nothing is stopping all of the robots from being Supervox. So why aren't they all Supervox? The answer is so that they can stay at the point they're at. There's no social mobility.
There's a class system in place.
There's a class system in place. They've created class.
Everyone knows
again.
That place.
You fucked up a perfectly good robot is what you did. Look at it. It's got classism. Yeah, I think you can get a really good essay out of, like, just Classic Who's views on workers' rights, unionization, all this stuff, because they end up getting murdered essentially because of this one guy's view, and we need to have collective bargaining for these robots so that one guy doesn't end up getting all the rest of them killed. Come on, robots, work together. Don't just listen to this one guy who thinks he's you, but he's not.
I have not much more to add on that. I'm sorry. I'm starting to get to that.
That's fair. Don't worry.
Classic
sci-fi
point.
Influences. I was going to do more research on this and then I forgot. But I did remember to look up Asimov's Three Laws of Robotics because they talk about robotic laws a lot in this serial. So anyone who was not aware, Asimov is Isaac Asimov. He was a big sci-fi writer in the sort of the mid-20th century. And he came up with the idea of the Three Laws of Robotics plus the Zerowith Law, which he later added. First law, a robot may not injure a human being or through inaction allow a human being to come to harm, which is the main one.
This fails it.
The story. This fails it because they've been reprogrammed by...
They chant kill all humans.
Yeah. They've been reprogrammed by the guy whose name I can never remember. Second law, a robot must obey the orders given it by human beings, except where such orders would conflict with the first law. A third law, a robot must protect its own existence as long as such protection does not conflict with the first or second law. So, this is sort of D84 sacrificing itself.
Mm.
That's following the third law because it does conflict with the first or second. So they're going, we may not injure a human being, we didn't. It didn't obey the orders because the fourth doctor said, don't put yourself in harm's way. And it was like, no, I need to protect the people. And the Zerowith law is a robot may not harm humanity or by inaction allow humanity to come to harm. So that one's, you know, also linked. Just wanted to bring those up because some people who've seen the serial might not be aware of the existence of these because they've sort of been canonized in sci-fi. In an interesting way.
Yeah. Which sort of leads nicely on to the next point of person versus machine as a general theme, though I don't think it's one they actually explore massively.
Yeah, it's one this is again one I wrote down in episode one. The important thing is why was canine not in this episode? And I don't really want the actual canon answer. I want the emotional answer. Like, why
does it make sense for the little robot dog to have a breakdown?
Why isn't K-9 in every episode? The problem is, if he was in this episode, all the robots would just fall in love with K-9 and they would be besties and they wouldn't listen to Taron Capel or whatever his name is.
That's a better resolution. That's a better resolution.
That would make K-9 sad. That would make K-9 sad. How dare you make us make K-9 sad? How dare you?
I'm going to cry.
And also, like, the machinery thing, this is, like, the last point on this list, but basically I love the idea of the robots being able to take themselves apart.
Yeah.
I thought that was so cool.
Can we have that again?
Yes.
Let me get this straight. A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard It can move anywhere in time and space.
Yes.
Quite so.
But that's ridiculous.
I really, really liked Robots of Death. It's just that it was the sort of episode where the things you can discuss, either you need to spend like 2 hours on it or you need to bridge
over.
Which
we don't have. It's the sort of thing where it's a really good story, but it doesn't, like, most of my frustrations are it doesn't do enough with any of the concepts it could be playing with.
Yeah.
And we explore that as a theme a lot in this show. And I think there are going to be other episodes we can go into in a more interesting way.
It was fun. It was very fun.
I had a good time. I feel like...
Our critique section is all about, like, positive things. We found things in the episode interesting. It was fun.
We've had a few dire ones lately. I enjoyed this.
Yeah, I didn't read the novelization. It was by Terrence Dix.
Really?
So these specific robots are called Kaldor androids because they're from the planet Kaldor. They've been in a variety of things. The main thing they're currently in is there's a series of audios from Big Finish called Robots. But as far as I can tell, there's no recurring, like, Kaldor android character as, like, a main character, which I would prefer. Because if you're going to call it robots...
Then it's about the robots, right?
A fucking robot. D-84 was among the life forms who were captured by the Rani and Sirian and incorporated into the Rani's menagerie aboard her TARDIS, along with the rest of the menagerie, who was briefly set loose in Albert Square, where the menagerie menaced the Doctors and their companions. This is from Dimensions in Time, and is therefore the most canon anything has ever been.
We need to do a Dimensions in Time episode.
We really do. It's on the list. It's on the list.
Good, I was just about to check.
At one point, attempts were made to suit Kaldor robots to the task of providing therapy as bereavement counsellors, but the empathy chips required ultimately conflicted with other circuits, and the project was abandoned. Yeah.
That's interesting.
It is, isn't it? That's one of the Big Finish ones, which is another reason I'd like to try the audios. It's just, you know, what I want from it is an exploration of the robot's sentience, and I don't know how much of it is actually about that. So if any listeners have listened to them, please let us know, because I'm not dropping £20 unless it's, you know, what I would like. And the TARDIS wiki pages are incomplete. They are incomplete.
That sounds generous.
Yes. Chris Boucher wrote a past Doctor adventure called Corpse Marker, which was a direct sequel to this serial. Now, if only I'd found out about this maybe 6 weeks ago, when I could have been researching this segment and I wasn't.
Whoops.
I think it was re-released in 2014. So if you're looking for a copy of that because you really like Robots of Death, there's probably tons out there for pretty cheap.
Yeah.
There is also some kind of weird, like, BBV level spin-off audio series of this novel, which involves Uvanov and Poole joining an anti-robot cult called the Church of Taran Kapel, which just seems to be misunderstanding Karen Tapal's whole, like, deal, like, his whole vibe.
Yeah.
I would argue he's pro-robot. But there we are. And there are 5 volumes of Robots Audios, like I said. But I got bored of researching today. And I like the serial, but thinking about the robots seemed misguided because I can instead be thinking about Murderbot. Any listeners who don't know about Murderbot, the Murderbot Diaries are a series of novellas and novels by Martha Wells. The first of which is called All Systems Red, or possibly it's Artificial Condition, I can't remember now, but I've read the first 2, and they're so fucking good, and they are about what I wanted the Robots of Death to be about, which is a robot overcoming its programming and having independent thought, having its own, like, developing its own morality, trying to figure out what it wants to do with its life. And it's so fucking good. The fucking Sec Unit is my best friend. I love Sec Unit so much. And the narrative voice is so dryly sarcastic and lovely and wonderful. And the stories are so good. And they're, like, perfect length novellas. And they're really wonderful to read. And I would do anything to read a Doctor Who crossover fan fiction that may or may not already exist, because I think that the Doctor and Sec Unit would not get along. But I do think that the TARDIS and the asshole research transport would get along.
This sounds brilliant.
Have you read Murderbot?
No, not yet. It's on my list.
Yes, I believe we got a copy of the first one in our Hugo's packet in 2019, because that's where I got mine from.
I don't know if I still have the Hugo's packet from 2019.
I put it all onto a fucking folder in my thing. I've pre-registered for Glasgow now. I still need to pay for my ticket.
Oh, nice. I need to do that.
We're gonna have such a good time. I'm gonna be 28. Yes. Fuck me. I'm gonna be 28.
Oh, I'll be 30.
So people can finally stop calling me a baby. I was the big baby there.
Gotta say, as someone who's currently 28,
be calling me a baby forever.
Still a big baby.
But yeah, I love Murderbot a lot, and I highly recommend it to our listeners because it's very, very good. I recommend it to my dad, actually, which is how you know it's good. Like, half of what Murderbot does is stand around pretending to listen to people and actually watch soap operas on their internal, like, Like, and
he's introduced to my friend Ash. He's got really into Murderbot recently. You'd like Ash. Ash is a good egg.
I will say, Murderbot, I can never remember. I think SecUnit uses its pronouns. I just always forget to use them. Sorry, SecUnit, I love you. It is great. It's very, very good. And I need to get the rest of them. The problem is they are expensive. However, I must support them because
you want more Murderbot.
Murderbot. Anyway, I just didn't look up a short trip because I didn't want to deal with more Fourth Doctor today. But I recommend that everyone watches Power of the Doctor when it comes out. I know it will already be out when this episode comes, but I'm hoping that by saying that I can speak it into existence.
Alright, shall we do rankings? What's your X of the week?
Yeah.
Because I know mine. I've got my X of the week.
Alright, you do yours then.
My X of the week is Silly Explanation of the Week. When Leela has the helium voice and she's getting all squeaky and then asks why the Doctor doesn't. He just says, Time Lord lungs. That's my silly explanation of the week.
I didn't remember that, and I love it.
So good.
My X of the week is Tragic Doomed Romance of the Week for D84 and Paul, obviously.
R.I.P. R.I.P. R.I.P.
R.I.P. D.
What's that?
It's a very fast 6 degrees of Blake 7. Did you enjoy how sped up it was? I could do it faster. It's a very musical episode. Do you think I could play it on the harmonica?
No. I won't be able to hear it anyway.
I literally can't breathe enough to play the harmonica because I find it so funny trying to play it. It was a one-pound harmonica. I don't know how to play the harmonica already, and it only gets worse. So Chris Boucher, who wrote the episode, was the script editor for the entirety of Blake 7. And he also specifically wrote the S4 finale, which traumatized a generation.
You need to watch. As somebody relatively recently asked us on Tumblr, yes, we'll do a Blake 7 episode.
When we have watched it. I did buy the Blake 7 annual a couple of months ago, so...
You did. You sent me very proud photos.
Yes. I actually also bought a magazine rack, or a magazine folder, very, very recently, like 3 days ago, so I could keep my Doctor Who magazines in it. And unfortunately, it is already filled up, so I need to buy another one for my future Doctor Who magazines. Also, we have a second degree of one, which is Brian Croucher, who played Borg, was the second Travis in Blake 7, and also these are joint winners of the Most Times Rosie Has Confused Two Names Award, Brian Croucher and Chris Boucher. Travis was described as psychotic by Rontaine. While highly intelligent, at least to begin with, his obsession with Blake approached monomania in its intensity. His mental condition seemed to degenerate as time went by, the ruthless but patient strategist of his early career gradually being replaced by an unstable brute. According to Blake, Travis had no friends and was generally contemptuous to most around him.
Oh dear.
Yeah. Travis was recast. I don't quite know why, and they said that he got like blown up or something and had his face changed. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't really know. But yes. So we have the second Travis in this serial. Out of five,
I'm gonna give it 3.5 leather sofas. Like, they've definitely had an audio on out of five.
Fantastic. I'm going to give it 3.5 corpse markers out of 5.
Oh, nice.
Thank you very much.
Where are we going to put it?
On our overall ranking. I think I would put it above Genesis and below the Time Meddler. What do you think?
Ooh, that high.
I don't know. Where do you put it?
I was putting bit between the two Doctors and Attack of the Cybermen, which is about 10 below.
That's very low for me, I think.
Shall we even it out and put it above the moon base?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
As a reminder, listeners,
diplomacy in action.
Our number one is Remembrance of the Daleks, and our number 46 is Talons of Wang Chiang.
Nothing.
Our number 45 is The Invasion of Time.
The Robots of Death. What did it show up on the Doctor Who thingy?
I will open it up. The Gallifrey Mighty 200, whatever it's called. Oh no, hang on.
Don't tell me they changed the link.
No, it didn't have the autofill anymore on my laptop. Okay.
It's been too long.
What number do we think it's going to be at? I think it's going to be at 65.
I think it's going to be at 52.
Okay.
Saying what my heart thinks.
It's at number 9.
whoa, I knew it was liked, but I didn't know it was that liked.
Yeah, fuck. I mean, it's good, wow. It's just quite generic to me. It's at number 9? That's insane. That makes it the... On this list, it is the... 1, 2, 3... It's the 6th best classic Who serial, according to this.
It's good. It's not.
No, I know. Hang on. 5 of the top 10 serials in this list are 4th Doctor serials.
The Doctor Who fandom needs to check its fucking self.
You are wilding out.
That's not right.
Yeah. But there we are. It was good.
It was good. I had a good time. There's just... It's No the Mutants.
Yeah, it's No the Mutants. That's so true. That's and no the thing. One will it doesn't ever hit find me that in the way. Controversial the... statement.
Oh, okay, right. Thank you very much for hasty recording this evening. I'm no sorry problem. For being so time pressured. I didn't expect an invite to a pub with someone I'm not caught up for in 6 months. So.
All right. So, thank you very much,
catch
everyone.
Up with my friend Alice.
Yes, lovely. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening to this episode of Reversing Polarity, a Doctor Who fan cast. It's been a while since we recorded, and I've had a lovely time. If you would
me
like
too.
To find
I love recording
other
the show, and I love you, Rosie.
Oh, I love you too. So, what was I? You've confused me, you wench. If you would like to find us elsewhere on the internet, and God knows you should because we're so cool and interesting, our podcast Twitter is at PolarityPod. Our Tumblr is at polaritypod.tumblr.com. If you have any long-form thoughts to share with us, you can send us a Tumblr ask or you can email us at reversing.polarity.pod@gmail.com. Please leave us a rating and a review on iTunes or wherever else you can do that because, God, I would like some more listeners to hear our good fucking takes.
It does make a difference to us.
It does make a difference to us. It makes
we love
joyful.
Making this show.
Yes.
We want more people to listen to the show so we can maybe one day make money and do a live show.
Yeah, that would be good. Tweet at us on Twitter. Tell us what you like about the show. Let us retweet you so that we can feel popular and cool.
Do it for our egos. We need it.
My Twitter is @Dotsays. I recently posted fan fiction. Who can believe it? Not for Doctor Who. It was for the Magnus Archives. Unsurprising.
Good. My Twitter is @AimTellStories. I have not posted any fanfic lately.
That's life. That's life. And you can join us. Oh, please join us next time for very exciting episode on The Ambassadors of Death. Possibly we might change it.
I was going to say, there's quite a death theme going on.
Yeah.